You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Matt Wehmeyer in this week for MLB.com Extras National League West, and our theme this week, bold predictions for the 2016 season and the five clubs in the NL West. We start things off with Lyle Spencer, who gives his take on the 2016 LA Dodgers. I'm going to throw some bold predictions your way, Lyle, and you give your position, either supporting it or shooting it down. So here we go. Prediction number one, Clayton Kershaw reclaims his throne as the undisputed best pitcher in Major League Baseball. What do you think?
Well, I have to go thumbs up on that one. I think, you know, for me, he's been the best pitcher in the game for 5 years, and there's no reason for me to have any doubt that that will continue. He's as dedicated a professional as you'll ever be around. He's in his absolute physical peak years. Yes, he will. He will. For me, there was never any doubt that he had not been the best at any point in the last 5 years.
I would think a lot of people would agree with that. And one thing I'm very curious to find out, and you covering the team and following the team, especially this past year, Clayton Kershaw struggled at the beginning of the season throughout April and even a little bit into May before he really turned it on and became Clayton Kershaw. Did anyone bring up the fact that he and his wife became first-time parents in the offseason, and this guy, and I'm totally serious about this, probably was not getting a lot of sleep in those first couple months. Did that at all affect his performance? What do you think?
Well, of course, he's human, and I recall seeing him, you know, with the baby during spring training, and having gone through that several times myself, it does affect your life. You're not getting regular sleep, and I'm sure he's as dedicated a father as he is a pitcher. So, yeah, that's a very good and very valid point. I mean, like I say, he, even though he seems superhuman, he's actually flesh and bone and blood like the rest of us.
Yeah, and when you're not getting sleep, it kind of throws things off a little. And I've got a little boy who turns 1 year old in a little over a week, and I haven't slept in about 13 months. So I know
know
how it goes. I know how it goes. And like you said, Clayton Kershaw, he appears superhuman, but when there's a little infant in the picture waking up at 3 a.m., it turns you human pretty quickly. So I just wanted to get your take on that, and I certainly appreciate that. No reason to think that he won't become Superman again in 2016. Clayton Kershaw, always a joy to watch. That brings us to prediction number two, Lyle, and that is Kenta Maeda wins double-figure games in his first season in the big leagues. Yay or nay?
I'm going to go yay again on that. I have seen him pitch. I covered the World Baseball Classic, and he was very impressive there. He just put guys away. He's very deceptive, and you know, he looks almost frail out there. He's very slender. I think he weighs 160 pounds, but he generates a lot of movement and gets, you know, he's in the low 90s with great control, great command, and importantly, you know, he has the advantage of hitters not being familiar with him. And early on, I think that's always an advantage for pitchers coming from other cultures. So, yeah, my guess would be in the 12 to 15 win range, because I do think they're going to continue to have a good offense and support their staff pretty well.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting 1-2 at the top of that rotation between Kershaw and Maeda. I don't think anyone's expecting him to be Greinke, but like you said, he's got the skill. He's got quite a pedigree from Japan, and we'll see what he does in his first season stateside. Prediction number three, Lyle, and this is kind of a big one. Yasiel Puig is dealt away at the trade deadline. What do you think?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I actually have a feeling that Puig at 25 will have seen the light and realized there are changes he needs to make in his approach to the game that will help him on the field in terms of his production. And I would not be surprised to see him have a really good season, possibly even a great season, because that he went through a rough year last year in every respect, physically and mentally. And I'm sure he's aware of the questions that surround him, and that he needs to do something to respond to all that, all the uncertainty that that really shouldn't be there, because he is a premier talent athlete. And when he is feeling good and performing, he's an elite player. So I just have a feeling. I know Dave Roberts very well. He has a great touch with people, not to say Mattingly didn't, but a fresh voice, a fresh, you know, environment for Puig should be beneficial as well.
Yeah, let's certainly hope so for the Dodgers' sake. His athleticism and talent is off the charts, and hopefully 2016 is the year that he reminds everybody of that, considering all that he went through last season. Maybe a bounce-back campaign for Puig is in the cards. Lyle, prediction number four, Jock Peterson leads the Dodgers in both home runs and strikeouts. What do you think?
That's an interesting one. I'd say I'm going to say no, because that would mean he would be playing every day, and I'm not sure that's going to happen. If he struggles against left-handers again, I could see them going to some sort of arrangement where he doesn't face them, just to prevent him from getting into bad habits. And clearly the talent is there for him to hit 30 home runs and steal 20 bases. But based on his season, it was so up and down, it's really hard to get a handle on exactly who he is as a player right now and where he is. I'd love to see him, like Puig, just resolve all those issues and smooth out those rough edges and become the player he can be. I'm sure the Dodgers believe he will do that and be that player. But right now, I'm gonna say no on that.
Yeah, such a Jekyll and Hyde season for Peterson in 2016. Just fabulous leading up to the All-Star break. The second half, though, he really, really struggled. Being such a young guy who, you know, obviously going through his first spell, struggling at the big league level, at any point did he really get down on himself, or is he one of those guys so supremely confident in his skills that he just knew it'd be a matter of time before he bounced out of it?
Well, I think going back to what we were talking about with Kershaw, he's obviously human and he's young, and when you're young, you tend to be impressionable. And I'm sure early in the season, it seemed almost too easy for him. And then later in the season, it seemed too hard for him. And, you know, he needs to find a middle ground there where, you know, he recognizes how difficult the game is, and yet he has the ability to excel and be consistent. And, you know, one thing with him, you know, with a lot of young hitters, the problem is they become over aggressive. I think he got himself in trouble when he was not aggressive enough early in counts, and off, you know, it seemed to me like he was looking at 0-2 way too much. And as a hitter, a young hitter, I think now more than ever, you have to go up prepared to hit. You know, if that first pitch is in your sweet spot, you have to be ready to hammer it. And some young hitters now are so conditioned to being, you know, disciplined and work counts that becomes a negative for them.
And speaking of young promising talents on that roster, prediction number five, Corey Seager is named NL Rookie of the Year. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I got to go yes on that one. This guy's just a superior talent, and he seems to have the right mindset to, you know, continue to work at his game, and I think he has a chance to be a major star real quick. But again, you know, he has to understand that there will be struggles, and we saw it in the postseason. Actually, he seemed a little overmatched, and I'm sure that was hard for him because he had so much success when he came up in September. But it's a different game in the postseason. You know, every pitch matters, and every moment and every situation matters. So it was a lot to ask of him to do the things he was being asked to do, hitting, you know, second in the lineup and playing, you know, the second most important position on the field besides catcher. So yeah, but clearly this guy's, you know, one of these one in a 10,000 talents in kind of, in some respects, like Mike Trout, who I covered with the Angels and saw struggle in his first, you know, call up in 2011. But all the time, I knew this guy was going to be a superstar because I saw the talent level there, and I feel much the same way about Seager.
Today, we're going to take a look ahead at what to expect for 2016. As Chris, I'll throw some bold predictions in your direction, and you give your position supporting them or shooting them down, and whatever you feel is the case, yay or nay. Let's start with prediction number one. The Giants' best starting pitcher in 2016 is not named Madison Bumgarner. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to go with that. That is not necessarily a reflection on Madison. I just think that AT&T Clark will be so much Jeter, Justin Marges, or Johnny Cueto's liking that one of them may step up.
Okay, and prediction number two, coming off his breakout season in 2015 and signing a big contract early in the hot stove season, Brandon Crawford wins another Gold Glove and also hits 25 home runs. What do you think there?
The Gold Glove, yes. Because reputations are hard to sleep, and I mean, his fielding is legitimate, don't get me wrong. But Gold Glove voting is so much based on reputation, and I think he'll, part of it will be, his performance will be excellent again defensively, but it'll having one Gold Glove award, that'll make it easier for the voters to give him another one. As far as 25 home runs, I actually think that's maybe a little bit unrealistic. AT&T will play half of his games at AT&T Park, the aforementioned AT&T Park, where it's going to be hard to hit the ball out.
And do you often find that with younger players who sign these big contracts in the offseason, as Crawford did, 6 years and $75 million, that sometimes when the new season begins, they feel burdened by that contract and they press a little bit too hard to live up to it? Or is Crawford one of those guys that really doesn't concern you because of his makeup?
Both, actually. If you can say both, I think there may be a little bit of trying too hard, but I think eventually he'll settle into the new burden, so to speak.
And that leads us to prediction number three. Buster Posey fills the only hole on his resume and wins his first career Gold Glove.
I'm going to go with that one. He did win the – he was honored named as the catcher on the Bill James, John DeWan, Stats Inc., whichever it is, fielding Bible team. He was the Gold Glove catcher of their choice, and I mean, those guys know their ball, let's face it, and they had good reason for naming him, to that squad. He frames pitches, superbly. He's going to have some pretty good starting pitchers to work with, which is going to help him, and again, his reputation is growing as a defender, not just as an offensive performer back there, so I think there's a really strong chance he'll win the Gold Glove.
You mentioned his reputation for pitch framing, which has gained, some notoriety over these past couple seasons especially. Do you think that's becoming a more respected part of a catcher's overall defensive makeup, is that pitch framing?
I think so, Matt. It's of course it's been around since the game began, but now as we begin to analyze just about everything, that's coming under scrutiny also.
Absolutely, and Buster Posey, maybe this is the year. Yadier Molina still the standard defensively in the National League, but getting a little bit older, and maybe this is the year that Buster Posey supplants him as the premier defensive catcher in the National League. Let's go to prediction number four. Hunter Pence's injury-riddled 2015 season, merely an anomaly and not the start of a downward trend for a player who's nearly 33 years old.
Boy, that's an excellent question, and I've given that one a lot of thought. I'm going to go with the anomaly, but the side of that, I'll fall on that side of the fence. But because there's a guy who does everything to keep himself in great shape. It all started with a freak injury last year, getting hit in the arm. Sure wasn't lack of conditioning or too much conditioning, but when you reach his age, you start to wonder. That's just it. But since I have to make a choice, I'll go with the anomaly.
And when you look at the, you know, the makeup of this team, so many, you know, high character guys and high class guys, you know, in that locker room, in that clubhouse. Would you say, is he kind of the emotional, spiritual leader of this club, if you will?
One of them, that's for sure. There's no doubt. Guys rally around him. They had a, you know, superb record when he started. I think it was 35-17 or 34-18, just off the top of my head. And that's just it. He didn't play enough, so he wasn't on the field enough. They need him every day. They need his everyday presence, you know, spiritually and between the lines to excel.
Yeah, he seems to be one of those glue guys that every successful team needs, and he certainly fits that bill for the Giants for the past couple seasons. Well, of course, Chris, when you talk Giants baseball, you just throw the numbers out there. 2010, 2012, 2014, even numbered years. This has been a big story all throughout. So here's prediction number 5. After winning world titles in the last 3 even numbered years that I just rattled off, the Giants begin to feel burdened by that expectation here in another even numbered year of 2016.
Having said mostly positive things about them, I'm actually going to go with yes. I think they will feel, I mean, I'm not burdened so much by that, but it's hard to win a world title. I mean, that goes without saying, but you know, a lot goes into it. Everything has to go right. I think they'll make the postseason, but somehow they'll fall short. You know, maybe the Cubs, maybe St. Louis. I'm not sure who, but I just can't see it happening. Maybe it's just laws of averages, you know, whispering in my ear. But I just can't see it happening, you know, for another occasion.
You know, when you go back and look, did this even-numbered magic year thing really start to take form after they won it in 2014? Was it something that was kind of more coincidental after 2010 and 2012? But then when they did it a third time, people started to say, well, now this is becoming something. This is magical. This is something from the baseball gods. Is that kind of how it went after they did it for the third time?
No, I think they took it, you know, as, hey, we're the best team, or we're the best team right now. You know, I don't know if they were the best team overall in 2014, but they were the best team in October. That's for sure. Now, having said what I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't win it in 2016, maybe they win it in 2017. You know what I mean? But I just... It's just uncanny, and I just don't see how it can continue this, you know, every even-numbered year thing.
We're going to switch things up a little bit this week and look into the future. As Corey, I'm going to toss some bold predictions your way for the 2016 Padres, and you give your position either supporting it or shooting it down. But before we get to that, a bit of news on this Thursday, as Alexei Ramirez has reportedly signed a one-year deal with the club. And, Corey, start off by giving us your take on that and where he could fit in with the Padres this season.
Yeah, no official announcement yet, but it appears that the Padres have agreed to a deal, a one-year deal with Alexei Ramirez. Lastly played for the White Sox. You know, he's 34 years old. You know, he's been in the big leagues for a while. The Padres have been looking for an answer to their shortstop conundrum here for quite a while. They've used 18 different guys since 2009, Matt. And while Ramirez certainly fits as a stopgap, at least this is a guy that has some durability to him. You know, he's played over 150 games the last 6 seasons. You don't have to worry about him, you know, breaking down. Even despite his age, he's in very good shape. He offers something with the bat. So, you know, this is a stopgap. You know, they have a young kid, Javier Garrett, who they picked up from the Red Sox in the Craig Kimbrell deal. He's a young guy. He's probably a couple years away, but I think Ramirez serves a role as kind of a place setter until Guerra is ready. So, you know, and they need to add some offense too. So I think, you know, probably on a pretty club-friendly deal, they found it in Alexei Ramirez.
Had Ramirez been on the Padres' radar for, you know, some time now, for the past couple weeks or even months, or was this more of a recent development between the two sides?
No, man, I think A.J. Preller is probably, he's liked Ramirez for a while. They sort of monitored the shortstop market as they moved into the winter here. Not a whole lot of options. Ian Desmond was another guy they considered, but, you know, Ian Desmond was going to require a longer deal and certainly a lot more money. And then the caveat there, too, Matt, is they were going to lose a draft pick because the Nationals offered Desmond a qualifying offer, and he declined it. So I think weighing everything out, you know, the Padres looking at maybe kind of a rebuilding year here, you know, with lining up quite a few draft picks in the top 100 picks in June. Didn't want to forfeit a what was going to be a pretty good draft pick.
Yeah, no question there. So there's the news on this Thursday. Alexei Ramirez, a reported one-year deal to play some shortstop for the Padres in 2016. So, Corey, let's run down those bold predictions right now. And you mentioned the qualifying offer, which kind of turned the Padres off to Ian Desmond. A qualifying offer is involved with prediction number one, and that is involving Ian Kennedy. Do you think he comes crawling back to the Padres on a one-year deal with no other free agent offers out there?
No, I don't. I think there's going to be an opportunity for him. I've heard he's been linked to the Royals. I think Ian Kennedy is a really good pitcher, and I'm surprised that he's still available out there. I still think he's going to get a multi-year deal. He's going to get paid. And, you know, while the Padres certainly like Ian Kennedy, I think they're really enamored with getting that like high draft pick, that draft pick compensation for Kennedy when he signs, and also for Justin Upton, especially if you're looking at a pretty good draft and an opportunity to kind of restock that farm system. So, you know, yes, while they would be happy to have him return, I don't think financially it's a fit, and I think he's going to find a better offer elsewhere.
Okay, prediction number two, you brought up the Craig Kimbrel deal, which landed the Padres Javier Guerra, their shortstop of the future. It also brought back outfielder Manuel Margot. Does he make his major league debut in 2016?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's a need for that yet. He's still young. I still think he has a lot. I shouldn't say a lot, but I think he still has some important steps to clear in terms of development defensively and offensively. I think the Padres would like to get another full year out of him in the minor leagues and sort of set eyes on him and see what they have. And, you know, no need to rush him at this point. Like I said, I don't think this is going to be a team that's contending for the NL West title. You have a couple guys in center field right now, and Melvin Upton Jr. and Travis Jankowski, who could probably hold down that position at least for another year.
And prediction number three, Corey, the Padres will deal away one of their coveted starters that A.J. Preller has no doubt fielded a lot of phone calls about, either Tyson Ross or Andrew Kashner.
Man, I'm going to shoot you down on all these. Apparently, I don't see them. I don't see them moving either one of those guys, especially Tyson Ross, who I still feel is somehow one of the most underrated pitchers in the National League and is under club control for a couple more years. Maybe Kashner, but he'll be a free agent after the year. But you still have to find someone to take his spot, and he's not going to break the bank. This guy had a lot on his plate last year. I think he's due for a little bit of a bounce back year. I don't know what that looks like, but yeah, I just think that, there's not a whole lot of depth in the farm system, the upper levels, for them to replace Andrew Kashner at this point. So I don't see them moving either one of those guys.
Okay, Corey, I'm going to get a yes out of you one way or another, and I think it's going to be on prediction number four, which is a two-parter. So here we go. Yanhervis Solarte will be named an all-star and hit 20 home runs. What do you think?
Oh, boy. You talk about a guy whose sort of season really got lost last year, Matt. I thought this guy really put together a nice year. Remember, they traded for Will Middlebrooks, and he was their opening day starter at third base. But Solarte just more or less shoved him out of the way, took the job, and ran with it. I don't think he has that much power, but, they're going to have the All-Star game in San Diego next year. They have to have some sort of representation there. I like Will Myers a lot, but I don't think he's going to fit in terms of the All-Star game nod, but I think the Padres have found themselves a third baseman for the future.
So that was a partial yes, maybe, kind of?
I feel like I need to say yes to one of these, Matt, so yes, let's say partial yes.
Partial yes. Okay, let's go for a full yes on this one. You brought up Will Myers. Will 2016 be a real breakout campaign or breakthrough campaign for him, I should say?
I think so. And I tell you what, I think he was on his way to having that last year, his first year with the Padres, when he suffered the wrist injury. He was their opening day starter in center field, moved to first base, looked really good there. I think ultimately that's going to be his landing spot for this season. And offensively, he was hitting at the top of the order, a guy that offered some power, some doubles, some home runs. His pitch recognition got a lot better, even just from April to May. And I think this guy was really, really starting to find something at the time he got hurt. So remember, this guy is still really young and doesn't have a ton of service time. But I think he's primed for a breakout year. And, yes, if you want to mark it down, do it with pencil, with an eraser, but put down Will Myers, National League All-Star 2016.
Very bold. I love it. Today we are going to switch things up a little bit and gaze into our crystal ball, if you will. I'm going to toss some bold predictions out there for the 2016 D-backs. And, Steve, you're going to give your position, either supporting it or shooting it down. And we're going to start off pretty big here. This is not a one-part or two-part question, but a three-part prediction, I should say. Part one, yeah, like I said, we're going big or going home, right? So part one of this prediction is Zach Greinke wins 20 games. Part two is he wins the NL Cy Young. Part three, he also hits .220 at the plate. So, Steve, have at it. The floor is yours.
Do I get to choose between the three of those, or is it all or nothing?
Well, you can kind of break it down. Like, let's do the first part. Like, first, do you think Zach Greinke wins 20 games?
I'm going to say he does not win 20 games. I will say that he does win the Cy Young, and I do think he'll hitting in Chase Field. That's going to help him. He likes to hit there. I'll say he'll hit 220.
And how many home runs for Mr. Greinke do you think?
Let's go two homers for him.
Two. How many did you have last year with the Dodgers? Do you recall?
That's a great question. I do not know.
I
know how much he enjoys hitting, and I know he's a very good hitter, and he likes hitting at Chase Field. So.
Yeah. All factors which play into his decision to sign with the Diamondbacks. The money, of course, did not hurt. So we've covered Zach Greinke, hopefully for Arizona's sake, a 20-game winner. The other half of what they're hoping is a dynamic duo is, of course, Shelby Miller. And Steve, prediction number two, Mr. Miller is a top-five finisher in NL Cy Young voting this year.
I will say no. Not top five, but I think he'll have a good year for them.
And define good year in terms of wins and ERA, you think, for Shelby Miller?
I think he'll probably get close to 15 wins, and I think he'll post an ERA right around 3-2.
Very nice, and hopefully no longer snake-bitten by whatever it was that afflicted him with the Braves last year when he lost a major league leading 17 games despite the ERA just north of 3. One of the more absurd statistics in all of baseball last year, but with that offense behind him, I don't think that's going to be a problem, do you?
That's what I was saying. I think he'll end up with more wins just because of that offense, and I think that maybe pitching at Chase Field, it'd be a little tougher for him, but I still think he's going to post a good ERA at just a little over 3 and rack up quite a few more wins than he had last year.
Yeah, and of course Arizona gave up quite a ransom to get Mr. Miller, but again, with him and Zach Greinke at the top of that rotation, they're going to make some noise. They should make some noise in the NL West in 2016. So, Steve, we've touched on the offense a little bit, and of course the centerpiece of that offense is Paul Goldschmidt. And prediction number three, Steve, digest this one. After two career runner-up finishes, Goldschmidt breaks through this year and wins the NL MVP. What do you think?
I'm going to go with a third straight second place finish for him, as long as we're making bold predictions here. I bet he has another really good year. But once again, somebody else gets a little more notoriety or sneaks ahead of him, this time by a closer vote. But I say he'll get his third straight runner. It's not third straight, but his third runner-up MVP battling in his career.
Do you think that in the past with the other two runner-up finishes that playing in Arizona has hurt him because it's not a marquee market and the team has struggled in recent years? Do you think that if Arizona is a contender in the NL West, that will boost his MVP candidacy and maybe put him over the hump?
Yeah, I do think that'll help. I don't think it hurt him last year simply because Bryce Harper just had such a great year. But I think 2 years ago when he lost out to Andrew McCutchen was at 2013, I do think that it hurt him by not being in the playoffs and not having a better team because, a lot of times writers, when they vote on that, they take into consideration, if a guy's on a playoff team or not. And I think that really helped McCutchen. Not that he didn't deserve it, not that he didn't have an outstanding year, but I do think that helped him to be a unanimous choice.
Okay, Steve, sticking with the offense here, prediction number four. After jumping from 7 home runs to 20 home runs between 2014 and 2015, A.J. Pollock hits 25 bombs in 2016.
I'll go along with that. I do think he's only getting better at this stage of his career, and I do think he'll continue to get continue to show a little bit more power. So I'm going to go. I'll go along with that one.
Do you consider him one of the more unheralded superstars or budding superstars in the game right now?
I do. I think if you look at, you know, some of the advanced metrics like wins above replacement, you know, I think he was fourth among position players last year in the National League, and that's something that doesn't really flies under the radar, maybe because it's Arizona, maybe it's because it was his first real breakthrough, breakout type year. But certainly he, you know, the players that he plays against recognize it because he was voted by them to make the All-Star team last year. So, yeah, I do think he's a little bit unheralded when it comes to fans outside of the Arizona market, but certainly not his competition.
Thomas, I'm going to toss those predictions out there. You give your position either supporting it or shooting it down. So here we go, starting with prediction number one. What else? And that is Carlos Gonzalez is wearing a Rockies uniform on opening day. What do you think?
I'm going to predict that he is at this point. They'll reunite him and Gerardo Parra, who they came up together in the Diamondbacks organization. They played together the World Baseball Classic and in Winter Ball. Now, not so much at the deadline if the team struggles, but I think that they're going to go into the season with Carlos Gonzalez. If you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd have said probably not, but now I'm beginning to believe that he will be on the roster. They would trade one of the other outfielders to fill the pitching hole.
Now, that's an interesting connection you bring up between Cargo and Gerardo Parra. Was there some motivation by the Rockies front office to bring in Parra in part to kind of placate Cargo a little bit?
I don't think it's to placate Cargo as much as they just saw an opportunity there. And they saw an opportunity for a major league type bat, and knowing that they've been looking to dangle outfielders out there to see if they can't find a way to get pitching in here, I think that they're going to have to do something at some point. You know, if you trade an outfielder for pitching, then obviously you're short an outfielder. So they knew they were going to have to get one. And the timing worked out that that Parra was signing now, although the decision on how to create an outfield hole hasn't been made yet.
Yeah, it's going to be a real interesting fit with that deep lineup and that ballpark. Obviously, at Coors Field, Gerardo Parra could put up some pretty big numbers in 2016. Thomas, prediction number two, the team strikes a deal with Justin Morneau to bring him back to Colorado.
I can't see that. And checking on it a couple of weeks ago, I didn't see it happening. I mean, if you look at it, there's some history here in that it didn't look like there was a spot for Jason Giambi after he helped the team out late in the 2009 season, and they brought him back kind of as the big bat off the bench. The problem after that, though, was it was very hard to structure your game so that you could use that bat off the bench, and there were a lot of games where he's sitting there and the Rockies have lost and they haven't gone to him. I don't see that happening, especially with the trouble that these guys have because of pitching. Quite often during long homestands, they keep eight pitchers as opposed to seven on most teams. So I don't see that happening. And the fact that they went out and they signed Mark Reynolds and they have Ben Paulson, I just don't see it happening. And plus, this lineup is very left-handed.
Okay, prediction number three, and kind of a tough topic here, but one that needs to be addressed regardless of the outcome of his domestic violence investigation from earlier this offseason. Jose Urias is traded sometime during the 2016 campaign.
It would be probably best for all involved if he were traded. Of course, I thought that last year when they acquired him, right when they acquired him. I mean, he first of all, he went from a team that was bidding for the World Series to a team that was very close to the number one pick. And that was a tough situation. If I were the Rockies, I'd have tried to move him very quickly and maybe even taken an offer, even if it wasn't ideal. I don't think the Rockies got an offer that they wanted, but I believe there was a mild amount of interest out there in him. But instead, they held on to him, and I think that they have to regret that decision a little bit right now. Granted, either way, even if they had traded him then, they probably would have been on the hook for some of that salary, and it's hard to swallow salary of a guy you haven't even had in your organization, but they needed to do it then. You would hope they could do it now, but the question will be what will be his trade value and how much of that contract will the Rockies have to pay to move him.
Yeah, it's just a tough situation all the way around with Jose Reyes, both on the field and off the field. Obviously, we'll see how that plays out over the course of the next few weeks and months for sure. Thomas, prediction number four, either Corey Dickerson or Charlie Blackman is an all-star in 2016.
Either could be an all-star. I think the one that is still here in Colorado, because I do believe that one of them is a candidate to be traded. Dickerson has a bat that'll play anywhere. And if you look at Blackman, he has proven that he could play a bit every day. He could hit at the top of an order. Is he a superstar? No, but he went to the All-Star game a couple of seasons ago, and he certainly is capable of being a very hot hitter. But I do think that playing for the Colorado Rockies in Coors Field is to the advantage of whoever is still here. The question is, which one will still be here? Because, like I say, that pitching hole is not going to fill itself.
Yeah, absolutely agree on that. And prediction number five, Nolan Arenado is a top three finisher for NL MVP honors this year.
I'm going to say yes, simply because the way he hit last season and the way that he has hit line drive since he's gotten here, he's going to have a big year. I just don't see him just falling off. Now, obviously in this area, it's hard to maintain a 40 home run pace, but he is very young. So I'm going to say, yes, he can compete for it. Now, obviously it's going to be hard to do if the Rockies are where they, you know, have been in the standings. And it looks like this is a team more for the future than now, but he is singularly exciting offensively and defensively. So top three finisher for the MVP award, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and Rockies fans don't either, that is for sure. Prediction number six, Jorge De La Rosa wins 15 games this season. What do you think?
You know, I think so, simply because he is in that 11 to 15 game range, and if they give him some offense, then he'll be okay, especially because, although last year it wasn't as good, but his history says he pitches very well at Coors Field, and the team's history says they hit very well at Coors Field. Now, the thing that would hold down his victory total is that he has had to deal with nagging injuries seemingly every year, whether it's a groin situation or blisters or things in the fingers. It seems like there's always something, but when he is able to take the ball on the mound, he's been a very dependable pitcher for the Rockies.